remember? Those who went to take...
He wants to talk now.
Tea or coffee,
he wants
they can
to talk now.
And we will start shortly when everybody settles.
Because we were setting all along.
Good morning once again. Or should I say my chair on it so that I can hear the loud response. My chair on it and Hoye Muore. It is indeed a very beautiful morning in Cape Town, and I want to take this opportunity to welcome honorable members and our colleagues from Transnet. Those I haven't seen this year in 2016, I would like to say belated compliments of the new year. It's no longer new year now because we are almost in the third month of 2016. This afternoon, it is a day when all of us will be watching or listening to the budget. And it is a critical day for all South Africans and also for the world. It is important because we know we are going through difficulties as a country and globally in relation to economic and financial issues. Sitting here today when we see receiving a briefing from Transnet, we hope they are also they will be also able to reflect on what will be happening today and also try to play their part in assisting the country moving forward. With these few words, I would like to once more welcome you and also invite the chairperson to say a word before we can share the briefing in terms of the annual report and the financial statement of 2014-15. Over to you, chairperson.
Thank you. You can hear me?
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Chairperson of the committee, members of the committee, my name is Linda Morato. I am the chairperson of the Transport Board of Directors. I am present today with my colleagues on the board. In no particular order, they are Mr. Bonyane, Mr. Peter Williams, there he is, Mr. Stanley Shane, there he is, and Mr. Brad Sheffman, there he is. I hope I did not leave anyone out. We are here with Mr. Gama,
Later, we leave it to the last one.
Brad Sheffman.
Okay.
Oh, the three here. Yes. Okay.
Another one
is the best. Yes.
Okay.
We are here today with Mr. Sebo Magama, our acting GCE, and his executive chief. In line with our statutory and accounting obligations, Mr. Gama will be presenting and updating the committee on our performance for the financial year to March 2015. Chairperson, we are grateful for this opportunity. I will now hand over to Mr. Gama. Mr. Gama, before you start with the presentation, kindly introduce your team and the executive team. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members of Parliament. We have a very strong team and a strong representation here this morning from Transnet. With me is Mr. Gary Peter, our Group Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Sidi Mbukule, Group Executive for the Results Management Office, Mr. Dion Kivik from Transnet Engineering, Mr. Carl Hoswego, the CEO of Transport Terminal, Ms. Ayanda Seba, the Group Company Secretary, Ms. Shunami Kaling, General Manager of the Chief Mr. Mboniso Konyala, Company Spokesperson, Namfumbeza Fishi, Group Executive Officer, Anuja Naidu from our pipeline business, Philip DeFetto, Transnet National Ports Authority. Behind me is Mr. Ravi Naya, Skyway. We also have colleagues from the Department of Public Administration as well, led by Mr. Komoto Mudiso, who is the Dean of Chiba. Without further ado, just
can I interrupt the second CEO? I think it is befitting for new board members, because we are meeting them for the first time, that the honourable members they also introduce themselves. I will start with myself. I'm the chairperson of this portfolio committee. We'll start with Honourable Teddy.
My name is Moss Selig. I'm a member of this committee. I'm from Limpopo. Thank you.
My name is Luyenge, but the actual name is Sugile, originating from Mutad. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, and the from Transnet. I'm Sugile. I'm Zogis Doranto, a whip deployed by the African National Congress and this committee. I am originating from the Eastern Cape.
I'm Natasha Mazzoni, I'm the DA Shadow Minister for Public Enterprises, and I'm from Pretoria.
Terry Sanders, born North West, raised Eastern Cape, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. Naren Singh, member of the committee, from the Port of
Durban. Other members who are not here is Honourable Kwangwa and Honourable Mopanda. I think you can proceed, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm just going to do an exhaustive summary of the results, and I'm going to hand over to Gary Teacher to continue with the financials. For the year from 1st of April 2014 to 31st of March 2015, group revenue increased by 8% to 61.2 billion rand. Our earnings before interest, depreciation and amortization increased by 8.2% to 25.6 billion rand. Our gearing is at 40% and our cash interest cover at 3.6 times. Our disabling injury frequency rate is at 0.69, which reflects a 4-year stable safety record and a world-class record, which is below 1. Capital investment increased by 5.7% to 33.6 billion rand, bringing the spend during the MDF period from 2012 to 92.8 billion rand. We continued to be hugely cash generative, and we generated cash from operations after working capital to 30.6 billion rand, which is an increase of 21.1%. Overall growth in rail volumes increased 7.7% to 226 million tons, which reflects good gains in terms of traffic which we are moving from road onto the rail. And this included export coal volumes at 12% growth and iron ore and manganese volume at 10.7% growth. Our BBBE spend of 45.2 billion rand is 105% of the total measures procurement spend for the year as per the DTI code. I'll ask my colleague Gary to delve into the detail of the financials.
Thank you, Mr. Gama, and to you, Chair. If I could then take us through to slide 3 of the presentation. Mr. Gama has already alluded to the volume growth and the revenue and EBITDA growth. EBITDA is earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. So it's really our operating profit. And significantly, that grew by 8.2%, which is much higher than inflation. Inflation at that point in time was 3.9%. So growing at greater length than inflation obviously shows positive economic growth for the organization. You can see that depreciation and finance costs also grew. Now that is expected in an infrastructure, capital-intensive organization like Transnet. You will see through the NDS, we have a counter-technical investment strategy. So as you invest in more assets, your depreciation will continue to grow quite rapidly, and so will your finance costs, because Transnet doesn't rely on the fiscus for any money. So we actually go out in the bond market and we borrow and we generate our own cash. So that means you'll expect the interest line also to increase. So infrastructure companies like Transnet will always have net profit being under pressure because of the depreciation and interest. But earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization is the important number. If I could move us through to slide 4, we just wanted to provide the committee with a historical view, a 5-year view of Transnet's performance. And you'll see that for volumes, importantly, since 2013, we've grown on average about 10% in volumes. And if you look at us compared to 2011, we've grown on average between 23 and 29% in absolute terms. So that's significant growth. On the financial side, if you look at revenue, EBITDA, and capital, we've grown over 20% since 2013, and significantly around 60% since 2011. The total asset line, I just wanted to highlight to the committee, in 2011 we had 167 billion rand of assets. In 2015, 328 billion. That's almost 100% increase in the 5 years, showing Transnet's drive to stimulate the economy through capital investment. The ratios at the bottom are also quite important because Transnet, despite the huge capital investments, has maintained healthy financial ratios, which is very important to the credit rating agencies. And I was just going to highlight to the committee that Transnet is investment grade, above junk status, and we do have a good standalone credit rating across the investor base. The last ratio I wanted to highlight, the last one in the page, group operational efficiency. You'll see that management has put a lot of effort into driving operational efficiency, an increase from 2013 of a 3.3% improvement to 13.8% in 2014, and importantly a 16.6% improvement on operational efficiency in 2015. Moving on to the next slide, 5.5, and just going into a bit more detail on revenue. Mr. Gomez already highlighted an 8% increase, which is above inflation. Where is this increase coming from? Well, if you look at the volumes on the top right of the graph, you'll see that Transnet has had greater than inflationary increases in all the major sectors, except for steel and cement and agriculture. And you can see that already from March prior year, these industries and sectors started becoming under pressure, and you see that today continuing. The revenue contribution, you have 52% coming from Transnet Freight Rail, which is the main operator in terms of freight goods on rail, 17% from Transnet Engineering, 13% from Transnet National Ports Authority, the port terminals contribute 13% as well, and the pipeline 5%. And we saw some minor growth on the containers. But I think an important point on slide 6, the next slide, is Transnet's austerity measures that have been put in place way before the economic downturn. Transnet, if you look on the far right, have a 51% personnel cost and 18% energy costs for our total operating costs. That means approximately 70% of our costs are quite fixed. So we actually were able to save 1.3 billion against planned costs, which is significant given a 70% fixed cost base, where personnel costs with evolving units will obviously have increases, as well as energy costs, as you know, the tariff increases that have come about in the last couple of years. So we are especially proud of the planned costs versus the actual costs, and we'll continue to do so going forward. Slide 7 continues with the view of EBITDA contribution by division. Again, you'll see that they mirror the revenue contributions, with freight rail giving the majority of 57%, and notably Transnet National Ports Authority 22%, and port terminals 10%. Slide 8 goes into more detail around depreciation, impairment, and finance costs. As I highlighted previously, we would expect a significant increase in these areas, given the increase in the capital investment, and borrowings are obviously greater. We also wanted to highlight that the increase in depreciation is also as a result of a revaluation that we did on our infrastructure at Freight Rail, and this was partially offset by various impairments, especially around receivables. The net finance cost increased due to the increase in borrowings, and that obviously results in your net profit, as I highlighted previously. The property, plant and equipment number on page 9, you can see that that's the most significant move on the balance sheet, where it moved from 207 billion to 287 billion. And slide 10 provides you with the details around the increase. Where we invested 33.6 billion, and by the way, that's a record investment in Transnet's history since formation. We have never spent 33.6 billion rand in capital in any given year, which is a significant stimulus in terms of economic growth. The other increase was made up of the revaluation of the infrastructure of 49.8 billion. That made the total increase of 38.5% from the prior year. Return on total assets remained static around the 6% mark, with a slight reduction, and it's really because of the significant increase in the assets and revaluation, which resulted in the slight decrease in return on assets. Total borrowings on slide 11 shows an increase of around 22%, which is in line with our capital investment program. And the gearing ratio is very important. The gearing ratio is looked at very closely by the rating agencies. Gearing basically says it provides you with a view as to the company's ability to borrow. And a gearing ratio for Transnet of 40% is very healthy. In fact, we have an internal benchmark that the gearing must be below 50%. So in other words, your debt to equity, your equity must be stronger and higher than your debt. If you have too much debt, the company's in trouble. And the loan covenants, which are the agreements we have with all our financiers, our lenders, our bondholders, must be under 60%. So it shows a significant headroom for Transnet to borrow, and we're doing very well from a liquidity point of view. The cash flow statement on slide 12 further emphasizes this fact. You'll see at the bottom of the left-hand side of the slide, total cash and cash equivalents at the end of the year was 6.2 billion. That is a 72% increase from the prior year, showing a healthy liquidity position. On the top right, the cash interest cover is another very important ratio that the rating agencies and investors look at. And our internal targets are to keep a cash interest cover, in other words, the amount of cash you have to cover your interest payments, at 3 times. But the loan covenants with our financiers is that we must keep it above 2.5 times. And you can see we're at 3.6 times, which is very healthy. We have various sources of funding on the bottom right of slide 12. We have very diverse sources. Liquidity risk is low, as I've said, and Transnet has a good standalone credit profile. In fact, the rating agency, as I've said previously, Moody's and Standard & Poor's are the rating agencies that look after Transnet, and they have investment grade ratings for Transnet. Again, this reiterates Transnet's ability to generate its own cash to be able to pay for its capital investments. I also want to highlight that Transnet has not had any government guarantees since pre-2005. And again, we don't rely any rand from the taxpayer. We generate our own cash and our own borrowings. Slide 13 goes into what we actually spent on. We have had some significant capital deliveries. You can see on the locomotives, we've invested in the Class 43 diesels, Class 20 electrics, and Class 21 electrics. So a significant amount of locos have come into the year. And we'll show you in a few slides' time about the expected locomotives coming in over the next 6 years. We also spent on rail infrastructure and wagons. Wagons, we actually had a new build program of 2,700 wagons. And that comes to approximately 8,000 wagons since 2012, since the market demand strategy commenced. And significantly, we invested a lot in our rail infrastructure, with screening of our track of 492 kilometers and putting in about 685,000 sleepers. Port infrastructure was also invested in heavily. You can see on the top right, on slide 13, that we invested in rubber tire and rail-mounted gantries, straddle carriers, ship-to-shore cranes, haulers and trailers. And lastly, on the pipeline, the NMPP, the coastal terminal was 77% complete at that time, and the inland terminal was 86% complete at that time. Again, the trunk line, the main trunk line, was 100% complete, and I can confirm that it was already supplying products, a single product diesel. Moving on to the capital investments analysis. We continue to obviously try and strive to grow the economy by investing and stimulating the economy. I've already spoken about the record 33.6 billion rand, but this was made up of 43% to expand business and 57% to replace or sustain business. And you'll find that that ratio will start increasing on expansion over time. There was underinvestment many years ago in organizations like Transnet, and that's why the market demand strategy is so important. And you'll find that as we get to the point of equalizing, sustaining and expansion, you'll probably get a 60-40% split of actual expansion, which will meet demand in the environment. And on the bottom left, you see that we've spent 74% on rail, because we followed the road-to-rail strategy, and the remainder was spent on ports, pipelines and engineering. The majority of the rail investment is spent on infrastructure and locomotives. And I'll hand over to Mr. Garmer, who will then take us through some of that expenditure on locomotives as well as our operations.
In terms of the locomotive acquisition program and delivery schedule, there was just one out of the 95 electric locomotives that have not been delivered as of the 31st of March. That program has now been completed, and the President went to Transit Engineering to celebrate the local assembly of locomotives, which was done at Good Sport, now Transit Engineering section, where Mr. Struzik is from. In terms of 2016 and beyond, the 1064 locomotive program is going to kick in. We've already started to assemble those locomotives, mixture of both electric as well as diesel locomotives. There's also on the extreme right, we indicate the wagons that are coming through in terms of future years. Next slide. In terms of volumes and operations, the GSB volumes increased by 3% from the prior year, which is really mainly due to the continued success. The coal volumes increased by 12% from 68.2 million tons to 76.3 million tons, mainly due to the improvement in product availability from key customers, as well as improved resource availability through sustained implementation of our capital investment program. We were very lucky. 76.3 million tons is the highest that we've ever been able to raise on the coal line, which was mainly because of mining activity. But our operational efficiency has also improved in terms of on-time departure as well as on-time arrival, which deteriorated slightly, but that was mainly due to disruptions which are caused mainly by cable theft, which we now believe that as a result of some of the acts that have been passed by Parliament, which makes cable theft a very heavy sentence, a sentenceable offense that we've seen in the past 2 days, the court in Kronstadt sentencing offenders to 48 years. So we believe that in the future, that will decrease, and we must thank Parliament for that particular intervention, because it's going to assist us in terms of improving and increasing our cycle times. So this strong volume performance also had a very positive impact in terms of corridor density. For the export iron ore line, we also improved from 54.3 million tons to 59.7 million tons compared to prior year. Key customers recovered from the production constraints of the previous year. You would know that the previous year, Kumba had come up with the new Kolomela mine. It began to stabilize at the time and assisted us in terms of both on-time departure as well as on-time arrivals, which showed also very good operational efficiencies from both our port as well as our rail. We also had very good TIPLA improvement, because we've been having TIPLA breakdown at Saldana, with the result that we have now, in fact, ordered a third TIPLA that will be coming through over the next 2 years. In as far as general freight increased by 3% from the prior year, mainly due to the continued success in the growth of market share arising from our road-to-rail strategy. The success of the business unit strategy also implemented 24 months ago assisted us to partially offset the negative impact of slow global and domestic economic growth. There's been a slow recovery from industrial action, and we had suffered up until then a lot of ESCOM-related power outages, which increased due to the challenges facing ESCOM itself. Both on-time departures as well as on-time arrivals improved significantly during the 2015 financial year. So for the full year to 31st of March, on the port side, we saw maritime container volumes increasing by 1% compared to the prior year, which was mainly largely due to the increased containerization of break bulk and bulk materials. We've seen a lot of customers in recent years putting into containers commodities which hitherto were traditionally mining commodities. We've also seen iron ore, magnetite, and manganese being containerized. But we did have a decline in transshipment as well as vehicle and transport equipment as well as the export of electronics. The ship turnaround time continue to improve at most of our ports, with the exception of East London and Richards Bay. East London largely affected by old equipment which we have been replacing, and Richards Bay largely affected by tipler breakdowns, and we are ordering new tipplers in Richards Bay. Train turnaround time continued to reflect well, with the exception of Saldana, which was due mainly to equipment challenges, which are being addressed as I've indicated. If we move to the petroleum products, that increased by 3.7% compared to the prior year, due mainly to increases in crude oil volumes as well as aviation fuel. The NMPP capacity utilization averaged 116 megaliters per week, which exceeded expectations. And we're very proud of the new multi-product pipeline in terms of the capacity that it's been able to give us. The pipeline operating costs are higher than the prior year, but this is mainly because we have had to employ new people as would be expected with typical also inflationary pressures. Safety. On the safety side, we're very proud, Chair, to indicate that the company recorded a DIFR of 0.69%, which means that for the fourth consecutive year, the company has recorded a disabling injury frequency ratio below 0.75, which is due to a continued focus and investment in safety, where the organization remains committed to making sure that we improve on a sustainable basis on the safety side, with the slogan that we are my brother and my sister's keeper, and making sure that there's zero tolerance to safety incidents. Despite this considerable effort, we still lost four of our employees in the current year compared to seven in the prior year. But most of them were really not in operations. It was mainly a lot of our employees using cars on the road that met with accidents. We are busy with interventions to deal also with that particular aspect. Human resources. For the year ended 31st of March, we attained all of our targets, especially at the lower levels, except females at the group expo level, where we're at 40%. We have an intervention to continue to steadily grow that, as well as at the extended expo, so that we can have a 50-50 by the year 2018. Females below extended expo at about 26.4%. Although this may look low, when having regard to the fact that in 1996 we only had 4% females in Transnet, we've made steady progress in terms of making sure that we get a lot of females to come in, because the environment was a heavy engineering environment in the past. There's been a very good uptake. In terms of training, we were able to spend 644 million rand. We exceeded in terms of the number of learners. We created 4,426 jobs as opposed to 2,900 that had been planned. So we continue to make very good progress. Although the spend was a bit lower, we were able to optimize by buying simulators, which means that we were much more efficient in terms of delivering the same training that we had targeted at a lower cost. In terms of energy efficiency and carbon emissions reduction, we continue to make progress in terms of total electricity consumption as well as total fuel. Our carbon emissions came down to 4.2 as against 4.25 million tons in terms of CO2 emissions against high activity. So we're quite happy and confident that our sustainability policies are beginning to work and we are able to reduce carbon emissions. This was also led largely by our ability to regenerate our own electricity from locomotives and to use it on the 15E and 19E locomotives on both of the iron ore line and the coal line. BBB spend and CSDT. we increased and improved to 105% from 85 from a target of 85%. And we were able to make sure that we continue to improve in terms of black women-owned as well as qualifying small enterprises. We will continue to look at this very closely, especially our supplier development program. It's very important for us in terms of local content as we prevent capital flight formation from the market demand strategy to make sure that a lot of the components that go into locomotives, into our trains, as well into straddle carriers, that they can be locally manufactured so that we make sure that we continue to improve on our SD obligations and make sure that we industrialize South Africa going forward. In terms of the PSMA, the materiality that has been determined by the shareholder is at 25 million in terms of transactions relating to losses and expenditure through criminal conduct. We are pleased to advise that only one transaction relating to criminal conduct has exceeded this limit. There was a transaction of approximately 519 million that was recorded. While the number of incidents themselves have continued to decrease in terms of irregular expenditure, this particular item was at the was a transaction where one employee had colluded with suppliers, and what happened is that we lost revenue as a result of discounts that were unauthorized, that were made to a particular company that resulted in this particular loss. The matter is before the criminal courts, and will probably be dealt with throughout 2016 and 2017. But the company is committed to complying with the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act, and we handle all alleged governance breaches in a firm and expeditious manner. And we have implemented a number of preventative initiatives to make sure that there's no reoccurrence of this type of action. And then our auditors indicate to us that the measures that we put in place in terms of internal controls continue to improve. Just in terms of the PFMA reportable items, we are committed to reduce this. 19 initiatives, in fact, have been initiated to deal with this particular issue, of which 12 have been completed as of the 31st of March, with the others to be completed within 3 months after that period. So we believe that we're making very good and steady progress in terms of making sure that fraud is prevented. To conclude, the third year of the MDS implementation has proved very challenging for us, especially within the context of global growth that indicated that it was beginning to weaken. The container trade, the 1% improvement, is a very good barometer in terms of looking at what future economic growth would be. and therefore we believe that amidst a challenging economic environment, the company did well and maintained its financial and operating performance. We consequently believe that we would continue to deliver on our market demand strategy, albeit that we would do much more work in terms of validating based on the commodity price weakness that has been experienced since the financial year ended in March 2015. So thank you and invite questions from the committee. And we stand ready to answer your questions, but also to take your useful contribution as always in terms of what else we could do and report on. We thank the committee for the opportunity to present the 2015 financial results, 2014-15 financial results. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the presentation. Challenges noted in terms of the... Oh, the hands are already up.
Chair, as a whip of the committee, can they wait until you say you give them a chance? Not the CEO to give them a chance to ask questions. You are chairing this meeting.
I like the initiative.
I think we co-chair with this meeting. It's allowed in any way. But that was on a lighter note. I was saying, now I'm distracted. I wanted to comment about the challenges in relation to the MDF. I will recollect my thoughts at a later stage. Let me allow honorable members to interact with the presentations. Honorable Sander, let's just go in that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope you're ready for my questions. My first one relates to how does Transnet plan to handle, in terms of its port maritime and freight rail logistics, the receiving and transporting of the anticipated 16 million tons of grain that is needed in terms of the drought mitigation? I'm aware that your port infrastructure is not necessarily capacitated to do so from the reports that I've received, and I just wanted to know what your planned adaptation and mitigation strategies are in that regard, because that grain is supposed to start arriving from March. Please update us in terms of how far that is and what you're planning to do to ensure the maize this country needs gets to where it needs to go without getting wet. Secondly, you've applied for effectively a 21.3% increase from MRSA to modernize your aging pipeline infrastructure. And apparently NERSA's complained a little bit about inaccuracies regarding operational dates and the values of your assets. I just wanted to find out, will any of that increase be used to cross-subsidize your railway investment? Because there's a bit of a concern. I know you have your MDS, which you're using. I think it's 300 billion over 7 years. But if that investment isn't going to be enough, can you confirm that none of that will be used on any other project and used solely as an investment into that pipeline? Then I wanted to know, with Transnet being your number one customer, we know that in terms of cheap steel imports, ArcelorMittal is currently feeling the effects of that and have approached you to reduce export tariffs. Are you considering those or any other measures to support your number one customer? Just wanted to find out what you are considering and how that's going to affect, because effectively if your top work customer doesn't stay in business, it could directly affect you staying in business. So just wanted to find out what you are doing there. My fourth, and then I'll hold back after this committee chair. is that I know that there was a recent proposal that you go in with Richards Bay CT to go with the coal exporting facilities to, you know, encourage growth and also the independence of junior black owned coal mines. Yet you've decided to go the more difficult, more costly route of building your own terminal. Please can you just elaborate and justify that decision to the committee? I'll hold back late, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. A few questions and a few will link on to what my colleague has asked, especially about the drought crisis our country finds itself in. Over December, I did my own private oversight at the Durban Harbour following complaints that I'd received from various importers about the backlog at the Durban Harbour. And when I got there, chatted to various clients of transport, for lack of a better term, and we found that the average wait was 19 hours for coal freight, and for normal freight we were looking at up to 48 hours wait on the outside of the harbour just to enter it. What struck me about this was that container volumes have decreased by about 15%, and this is because of the rand-dollar exchange and the reduction in imports that are coming into our country, especially through Durban Harbour. So I'd just like to know, in terms of what we're doing to alleviate this wait time, especially for coal freight that gets damaged and the kind of costs involved in destroyed freight when you're waiting 19 hours, where are we in that? Because last time we spoke about it, we had assurances that everything was up to scratch, and in actual fact that especially at Durban Harbour we were reaching world-class standards in terms of time waiting. Then, Chair, I want to talk a little bit about the inland ports, because these are always issues that get brought to us as members of Parliament when complaints from the public come in. Now, we've got City Deep and Kasoon, and reports actually in various financial papers in the last month have said that they have enough capacity at these two ports to last at least for another 20 years. But at Tambo Springs, where we're planning to do our, you know, new operations, what worried me was a report that I read that said that wagons that could be accommodated at Tambo Springs are 750 metres long, but in actual fact what Transnet would need was 1.5. So can we just get some clarity there, because I've been receiving the strangest emails from people asking me, yeah. So that's why I'm asking you. These are the questions that we get, that's why I want you to tell me that it's not true. So let's just speak about that. Then, in terms of talks that, again, are reported, and a lot of, you must understand, a lot of the stuff that we read about Transnet, we read about in the papers, financial mail, so these are reports that we get, that there have been halted talks between Transnet and Eskom regarding coal and coal supply to various power stations, and that there's been a bit of, not animosity, but there's been a bit of disagreement between Eskom and Transnet in terms of mines that are used that have existing infrastructure or infrastructure that could be expanded towards the mines. Can we have a little bit of clarity as to that? Because I think you'll all know the controversy regarding certain coal mines that are now being procured by Eskom, and we'd like an answer to that. Then, Chair, in terms of the drought, as my colleague touched on, we are going to be exporting record amounts of maize and other food products as of the end of March. We need a little bit more information as to what terminals are being earmarked as the terminals that will accept the extra maize and extra produce that comes in. Is it just going to be Durban, Port Elizabeth and Cape Town? What harbours exactly have been earmarked to take on this extra load? Because these are questions that farmers are asking us, and there has to be clarity for the country so that we know where this is going in. And in terms of freight, if Transnet doesn't have the freight capacity to transport this food around the country, is Transnet working with any other organization in terms of how this transport will run fluidly? Because we are getting to the point where we could be reaching a food crisis at the end of March. And a company like Transnet will obviously be instrumental in making sure that food reaches the most outlying areas of our country. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe let me first appreciate and welcome the presentation by both the chairperson of the board and the CEO. And my first question, Chair, relates to the acting position in the leadership of this organization. So maybe this question should be posed to the board as to how long would they want to see someone acting in a position for more than 6 months, which I believe that has got something which is not going to take the organization forward, to keep someone who does not who is not very sure about his or her future. So what is it? What are your plans regarding that? Because the progress that we see in the organization indicates that you should not look around. You need to do what you are expected to do because it is there. Secondly, this organization has actually come from a bad position in the past. The turnaround strategy that was implemented has actually put this organization where it is today. And its global competition is very much promising. But safe to indicate that as a rural boy from the Western Kondo in the world, when we always hear about progress made and transformation taking place, it is in KZN, it is in Johannesburg. When it comes to the Eastern Cape, it must be in East London to be the closest. And then you say nothing about your expansion to reach the underprivileged, which I believe it is what the present government wants to see. The industrialization process seeks to ensure that the spin-offs, even if your mandate does not say go to Kofu Bay, go to Mzamba, go to elsewhere, but in terms of expanding, the expansion should not benefit the people of the world when the majority of the locals do not benefit. How best can you try to go out of your own way and find a way of reaching to these minor ports, because they are also indigenous? Thirdly, you spoke about borrowing in infrastructural development, which I agree because it confirms what once former MEC for Economic Development in the Eastern Cape, who then Minister Godongwak, about the suspension of development as a direct response to the economic downturn that you experience. To say you rather borrow to ensure that you develop your infrastructure, even if it's long term, which I really appreciate because it has got an intellectual understanding of what you are doing. Do you have a depreciation policy in the organization for your assets? And it is appreciated that instead of depreciation that takes place in your organization, your assets appreciate. Can you dwell much more on that? From which assets are actually doing much more in terms of your growth in the organization and its sustainability? And then lastly, Chairperson, the human resource ability to sustain the existing staff. Generally, do you have a mechanism that seeks to retain what you have? Because what you have is very crucial. Make sure that there are greener pastures where you are, so that your people do not look for or cannot be offered more than you do, because what you have must be kept in there in order for you to grow bigger, because you have that ability.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
The first one I think is linked to what Honorable Lang has been raising in the area of job creation. If you say you are targeted to create 4,426 jobs and you only manage to create 2,905 direct jobs, and my understanding is that these are positions that have been budgeted. What led to that kind of a situation where you could not manage to fill those vacancies as I've indicated earlier on? But I must as well appreciate the fact that in the area of people with disabilities, I see you are at 2.3, where you are targeted to be at 2%, which is really appreciated. The second one is in the area of irregular expenditure. Now you have managed to drop irregular expenditure from 49.6 million. 32.2. Again, I think we appreciate the effort that has been made in that particular area. But surely, we can still do more. It's an area that we also cannot be proud of. If you can as well try and share with us what led to this particular situation. The second last issue that I want to raise, Chair, is the violent strike action at the Port of Ngur in 2014. Do we have measures that were put in place now to ensure that we don't that particular situation does not arise again? And what mechanisms do we have to continue to interact with employees at the level of organized labor? What kind of relations do we have with organized labor to ensure that we don't continue to have violent strikes as we have witnessed at Port of Ngura, as I've indicated? The last one, I would appreciate if you can share with us your communication strategy. What is it that you do to try and share with the broader society some of the good stories that you are sharing with the committee today? Because I'm a bit worried. I hardly hear. Unless if I'm in some instances, I'm not necessarily following how you are performing in this particular area of communication. But I would appreciate if you can just share with us your communication practice as to what is it that you do to make sure that the community at large do know the kind of programs that you are doing in the as an organization. I think we appreciate the fact that you have managed to drop the disability frequency injury rate, as you have indicated in one of the slides. It's appreciable, and I think we definitely
definitely appreciate what you have done in that particular area, but we'll continue to monitor the situation at the level of the portfolio committee. Thanks. Let me pause for a moment.
Chair, I've just got a two-finger on a comment that I made, because I see that it caused mass confusion amongst our Transnet delegation, and I don't want them to be confused when they answer the question. So, Chair, with your permission, I'm just going to read, and this is the report that was in the paper, so that you understand about the length of the trains that I mentioned, so that we, when you answer me, you understand what I meant. It says, the NDA states that the Durban-Joburg corridor goods must move from road to rail. Unfortunately, City Deep and Kasern and the planned Tambo Springs can and will only be able to accommodate trains of 750-metre length. Transnet plan to lengthen their trains to 1.5 kilometres to try to be competitive on the Durban-Joburg route against trucks. This follows that they need a station of 1.5 kilometres long, otherwise that will result in the breaking up and shunting of trains that will add days and cost to rail operation. So that's what I was talking about, just so that we know for when we have to answer. I hope it clears it up.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe my question would be linked to the last comment made or the last reading made by Honourable Mazoni, because my question would be for Transnet to explain to us what the transport economist and rumors they said, and I would quote what he said. He said, higher than expected pricing of the pipeline meant that not much liquid bulk traffic has been transferred from road to pipeline. He said Transnet should make a big point of the pipeline safety value. And he also said this could be a basis of offering concessionary or subsidized tariffs based on the socio-economic benefit of public safety. Could you just explain to us what he meant? Because I'm asking this question because I would want you to also explain to us that how much of your bulk as Transnet of your bulk is transferred from road to rail, and how much is left is still left, and what are you doing to take all the bulk of Transnet, if it is possible to take it on rail only and not use the roads, because really our roads are not safe. My second question, Chair, is on page four of the slide. Mr. Peter, yes. In your presentation, you said you talk about the increase and the positive increase from 2013 to 2015 that you presented in front of us of the group operational efficiency, the percentage. But you haven't said you haven't told us why is it not going back to the percentage of 2012, which is 17.5. What is the problem there? Why didn't you reach that 17.5 of 2012? Is it because of the economic downturn, or is there anything that has happened? And the economic downturn, if my memory serves me well, I'm not sure, it was calculated to 12 comma something, ne? The downturn, or to 8 comma something, the downturn in 2012, the economic downturn globally. It's around 10, it's around 10 to 12. But here in 2012, your operation, your efficiency was 17.5 in 2012, but in 2013 it went down to 3.3, and then in 2015 it's 16.6. Chair, also, the
the main aim of the NDP is job, is one of the aims in the NDP is job creation. Next. In your exportation volume, you said you increased by 12% from 78.2 megatons to 76.3. I just wanted to check in that increase, were there any jobs created? If there are any jobs created in doing that work, how many of us as females have you employed in your operations, or you haven't employed anybody as much as you have this increase of 20? To me, the increase of 12% needs more human resource so as to be able to be efficient in whatever you are doing as a company or as an entity. Oh, my last question, Chair, is on the on the death in Transnet. I just wanted to check to you, do you have a prevention strategy within your within your property as Transnet, and is that yielding any positive results? And how many deaths did you have besides the ones that you spoke about, the road, as a death on the road? I want to know those that are in your property where you are as a Transnet. What are you doing to be efficient and to avoid those deaths? And what about the deceased family? How do you then compensate them? Do you only compensate them financially? Is there any psychological help that you also do for those that were working with those that have passed on, and for the families? And those families, if they lose a person that has been their source of income, what then are you doing to that family? Do you take one person from that family and train that person maybe to be part of your company so as to be able to give to make their everyday life successful? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Let me also ask a few questions to our colleagues, but I would like to begin by appreciating the fact that you continue to show financial stability despite the challenges in the country and globally. That we really appreciate. Now, the concern from our side will be the findings from the AG relating to the irregular expenditure and process for the previous financial year. And I was listening to Peter, trying to put a very brave face saying we have not been approaching the shareholder to give us guarantees. It's really appreciated. Now, the AG was concerned about your non-compliance in terms of regulations, the control measures, the CO, and for, I think it's 12-13 and 13-14, which nothing has been done, according to him. We just want to find out how are you going to assist us in that regard, because you remember our oversight role is to make sure the monies are properly spent, and if they are irregular and fruitless, surplus expenditure to the amount of 32 million. It's a lot of money. It worries us. Secondly, the engineering section, we call it Transnet Engineering, managed to perform to reach targets in most of your program, but on the research and development, you didn't. The R&D, and we will be worried because we expect the organization of the high class performance entity like Transnet to pay much attention to research and development and innovation. And if the money is not spent in this regard, it worries us. What are the programs around that? Why were we not able to meet the target? Is it because mainly the in the engineering section you deal with issues of math and science, which are a problem for the country in general? We just want to find out. When President spoke during SONA, he said there isn't much we can do in relation to global economic turbulence, but there is something we can do about ourselves here. COE spoke about industrialization program, which we have seen here, we are doing something. We will appreciate, not even today, maybe in the future when you reflect during a board meeting, your high executive level meeting, that what is it that we need to do differently to make sure we contribute towards that goal. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much to you and the honorable members for the reflection and also the questions. I have recorded no fewer than 21.
Is that all?
We need
to up our game.
Maybe before you answer, Honorable Singh is the chief whip of IFP, so he missed his opportunity to pose a question. Can we allow him to do so?
Thank you very much. I'm sorry about this. But making it was carrying on, but I had to come back to it. Thank you. I don't know if this question has been asked, but one of the questions I have is the integrity of your pipeline. Now, I know many years ago I initiated an investigation into a pipeline leak in Tonga, and we had a commission of inquiry. Last year, during Christmas, we had leaks again at Afikai, near Hammerstein. A few years before that, there was also leaks in Afikai area. We just want to know about the integrity of your pipeline, what checks and balances are there, what safety measures are there for communities. The second question relates to the Durban dugout port. I think I read somewhere that you're now looking at 2040. Well, it's a long way from now. Many of us won't be around. But I know Transnet has spent a lot of money in acquiring that property. Are you going to get a return on your investment between now and then with the people that you've got there that are renting from you? And maybe at some stage, Chairperson, you can provide us a list of who the tenants are on the particular property and how much they are paying to Transnet at the Durban dugout port. Two more questions. One is, the second last is on billboards. I understand that you have open spaces, and I had a young, and I wouldn't like to say this, African gentleman who came to me the other day complaining that he's a contractor that does billboards, but it would seem that all spaces that Transnet have had have been allocated to one company or where they can only put up billboards in those spaces. I don't know if it's true or not, but he was very concerned as an entrepreneur moving forward. And he did tell me it was also subject of a court case, and a court had ruled on that matter as well. But I didn't get all the details. But all these spaces have been leased to apparently one big company to the tune of about R1 billion. Okay, so I see a shake of the head, but and then the last question is student bursaries for maritime studies. I mean, is there any program that you have? And, I had a young student from Sydney the other day, dropped out, father's got no money to continue paying for this bright student to do maritime studies. So what programs do you have? Thank you, Chair. I understand the other questions about internal control and the locomotive contract and regional connectivity in the African markets have been asked by other members. I just want to know about on page 18 of your report here, you haven't met your targets. So I just want to know what are your constraints in that regard with regional connectivity. Because you, the 32%, I think it's on page 18. Let me close to that. Promote regional connectivity through the integration of freight rail and maritime infrastructure. Your actual was 31.25%. And then position transport engineering to become the preferred supplier of rolling stock within the African market in April 2014. Your timeline is April 20, and your target is 45%. Your actual is 45%. It's in this... Thank you.
Is there anybody using the cell phone?
It's that mic. That mic's problematic.
Oh, the mic is
problematic. You can't take
the mic. I have to call the big chief to do the second. Those are the questions, CEO and the chairperson.
Thank you very much to the member of the spirit question. We're going to answer the question in order of how they've been asked. The first question is around the ability of Transnet to handle grain, given the droughts. What we want to indicate is that there's about 6 million to 7 million tons of grain that has been indicated needs to be handled by ourselves. We are formed together with the grain industry, a comic which is Transnet, represented by its freight rail and port terminal businesses, that is looking at these logistics. This has happened before, and really the success of such an endeavor is directly related to the coordination among the different parties, which is the grain industry and Transnet, and the extent to which all of them work together. On the rail side, we have enough capacity to deal with any eventuality. Where we might fall short is on the port terminal side, but the Carlos of Cuba, here just to indicate some of the additional facilities that is made available in order for us to make sure that.
Thank you, Chair. I think just to, and the CEO has really touched on the preparation plan that has been done. As Mr. Gama indicated, through the crop estimation committee in the Department of Agriculture, it's not 16 million tons. I think they validated it down to 6 to 8 million tons. We've set up a command center. In fact, this actually came as good news for us because we need the volume. We really need the volumes. We have the capacity. We have the capacity. We on the rail side,
they made available the rule instructions. We have the silos. In fact, we now have even up to the conveyor belt space to make sure that we prepared for when this does start to flow. So integrate the teams, not just with the Intransnet, but with the industry as well, working, you know, in conjunction with them. You would have seen, because the story was on Carte Blanche as well earlier this year, and Mr. Ulrico David from Transnet Freight Rail, is a Transnet coordinating team leader.
Wait, what's his name?
Mr. Ulrico David. He's the Transnet coordinating team leader from our side. He was on Carte Blanche. Just to give a full sort of breakdown of the state of readiness from the Transnet rail side and from the Transnet port side. And so the silos are well prepared for this event. On the rail side, as I've indicated, the rolling stock will be deployed, and also in terms of the stairs for the consumables, things like conveyor belts, the capacity.
Okay, thank you very much. In terms of the NASA application and whether or not we cross-subsidize, I think what we want to indicate is that the transit pipeline business is a regulated business, and to that extent, it's actually ring-fenced. The tariffs that we apply for relate to what happens in the pipeline business directly. There's no cost of subsidization that takes place within that space. And we do give to NASA all of the income statements and balance sheets of the Transnet pipeline business audited on a regular basis. So we don't ask from NASA for anything to do with any other part of Transnet except for the pipeline business itself. In terms of the ArcelorMittal question, we're not aware that they are Transnet's biggest customer, but they are one of the top customers in Transnet. Through the DGI, there has been an intervention that is taking place to deal with the steel industry, and Transnet is part of that. And we are looking to the extent possible at what it is that various suppliers to the steel industry can deal with structural issues within the industry, which not only affects the one entity, but affects a number of those entities. You would be aware that Hyphal Steel, for example, went into business activity. The related industries, manganese, magnetite, they're all in similar kinds of distress. And as Transnet, we have taken a number of measures, including price reviews, to try and assist some of them to continue to stay afloat, which is part of job preservation. The Transnet, as part of its developmental mandate, is actually doing within the economy of South Africa to try and assist. And we are hoping that when the economy turns, things look a little bit better, we can go back to normality, although economists indicate to us that that might take a longer time. On the Richards Bay terminal, Transnet is not building.
On that point again, if I recall very well, you had what you call the strategy to incentivize people who are doing the local export, the finished products from the country. Are you still continuing with that strategy?
Yes, and our pricing strategy is such that we incentivize export of manufactured goods through the pricing system in the port. So you would find that exporters sellers will pay less than importers because we're trying to make sure that we export more. So we continue with that. But we are looking at a longer term structural adjustment in terms of the pricing strategy together with the DTI, so that we also penalize those who export unbeneficiated commodities. But it's a long-term, 10-year strategy that our Port Authority is working with the Department of Trade and Industry in order for us to be able to move forward. But we actually will continue to support that. Just in terms of the terminal, Transnet is not building any terminal in Richards Bay on its own. In fact, as we understand it, RBTG Grindrod has been authorized to build a 20 million ton coal terminal in Richards Bay, which will support junior miners and PEE. On the question of average waiting time in Durban, I will ask Carl to just talk you through the agreement that we have with the industry, the Association of Shipping Lines, in terms of waiting time. Knowing fully well that Durban is a harbour that is under construction, there are certain things that have been agreed to between the shipping lines and ourselves, and in fact, if we breach that, there would be a surcharge that would be charged to us. But I don't think that we have breached that at this point. So good.
I think just to add to what Mr. Gama said, we have been now busy for a few years with the extension of the capacity at Durban Harbour. As Mr. Gama has indicated, it has been somewhat of a construction site, but we've introduced also measures to deal with particularly the congestion of trucks coming into the harbour. For example, we've recently implemented a truck booking system, which works the same as, you know, when you would make an appointment with a doctor. Instead of going there without an appointment, you make an appointment and you arrive at the time that you've, you know, booked to have the appointment, as a way of alleviating trucks from waiting outside the harbour and causing congestion on Bayhead Road and Lullaban Road leading into the harbour. And that's actually gone quite a long way in dealing with a lot of the congestion and the other social issues. We then come with the trucks that are standing there overnight waiting to go into the harbour. We've also implemented extended stacks at the port, which is a very fine balancing act, because the port in itself, you don't want the port to be like a storage area. You want, you know, fluidity at the port, but with extended stacks, you're then able to deal with some of the congestion issues. But working in conjunction with the trucking and the hauler companies, we've been able to deal with a lot of that. We've also introduced some Saturday and Sunday additional slots to deal with that. We set up a committee with the logistics industry, particularly the truckers and the hauliers, which we call the TGC Durban Port Committee, which looks at a number of these issues. And I think as we get to finality in terms of the engineering work that's taking place in extending or developing the capacity at Durban, we're going to see a lot of these congestion or inefficiency issues being sort of worked out of the system, and making sure that we don't have the backlog that's
okay, thank you very much. In terms of the inland ports, Tambo Springs issue, the way that rail operations work inland is such that a train doesn't really matter how long the chain would be. At Pretty Deep, for instance, we've got four different lines that load and unload cargo. You do need to shunt the train. The train doesn't really stop. It keeps moving at, say, 3 to 4 kilometers per hour, so that the crane itself can then offload the actual level. So we don't think that there's any particular issue really that is there. We know that the different cavern is going to be full by 2018. We've just increased Pretty Deep, and it was already at 80% of utilization. So Tambo Springs has not yet come into play. There's still discussions between the Ekurhuleni government and the Gauteng provincial government and ourselves in terms of Tambo Springs. Ravi, I don't know if you want to add anything around the chain length.
No, I think just Chair, I think just to add to what Mr. Gama said, yes, the train length does not really matter in terms of the trains that we move. If the train is too long and the siding cannot accommodate the train, we'll break the train up into two or three pieces, and it's normal procedure in our operations on a day-to-day basis. I think, however, the important thing to notice is that most of the trains that we run on the Natal Corridor are run for specific customer service requirements. So some customers want a long train, some customers want a shorter train, some customers want maybe a shorter train with an overnight service, and so forth. So the services are prioritized and designed for customer needs.
On the Eskom and Transnet matter that you raised, it's a rumor. You don't think that there's dynamic interchange of ideas between Transnet and Eskom, and Transnet follows the market in terms of what the market wants us to do. There has never been any time when Transnet has failed to interface with Eskom. We talk all the time with different committees that deal with different issues. The Eastern Cape matter that was raised in terms of rural areas, the Transnet and the Eastern Cape government is quite a committee. One of the things that we've always said, especially from the Eastern Cape, is that they need a railway line that moves from Port Shepstone into Mthatha. And even now, there is a long-term development framework that's taking place where the discussion continues to take place. But so far, we haven't been able to prove viability. In terms of what product would need to be taken, but it's something that is not going to be taken off the discussions, because we continue to talk to some of the farmers in terms of what could happen. But also in terms of the smaller ports, they don't fall under the national purview of transport. Some of them are fisheries, so they fall under the Department of Fisheries and not necessarily under the National Port Act. So if you talk about Port St. John's, for example, a lot of those smaller ports, they are not part of the Transnet sort of network of ports. But we continue to look at ways of how to improve the internet. But what becomes important, I think, for us is the kind of activity that takes place. For instance, on the southern side of the river, in places like Sex Grange, there's a lot of agriculture that is taking place there, some more cheap that we'll be able to move. So the Mthatha Mavele line has been opened to try and deal with some of those issues. But the full utilization of that is going to probably take place in the next 3 years where some of the trees are growing. So we continue to interface with the farmers to deal with it. The issue will become at what point it would become viable for the charter to connect with the project. So Eastern Cape government is quite pleased with that, and they remind us that we have this update of studies, let's look at whether this new information has come into place, as it comes into place for that city. I just want to deal with the priority question. And then, the board questions will deal with last. Gary, can you deal with the board depreciation, the transfer depreciation fund?
Thank you, Mr. Garner. Through you, Chair. Before I just delve into the depreciation policy, also just to add on Eastern Cape, East Transit has a significant program as it relates to enterprise development and doesn't just look at the main centres. Yes, we have incubation centres in Port Elizabeth, but we also have incubation in Utenac, where we actually help small businesses, black-owned, black-woman-owned, and youth-owned businesses. We've also entered into a partnership with Nyakazo, where we're actually looking at 100% rural black-woman-owned cooperatives to run containerized bakeries. So we take the containers from the ports and we create bakeries. We build the bakeries and we give them tuk-tuks to be able to deliver in the rural areas, and they actually have self-sustaining businesses, which is a great success, and we're going to be increasing that program. We're also planning the Rolisa funding program to provide funding to SMEs and black women-owned and youth-owned businesses within the Eastern Cape. So there is a significant amount that we're planning. Enterprise development hubs are planned to be opened in Mthatha as well as in Tanzania, and that's planned for the new financial year. And that enterprise development hub is a one-stop shop where SMEs can go and get tax advice from SARS, they can get advice on funding from the National Youth Development Agency, CEDA, CIFA, our partners. We have Transnet itself talking about how you can get procurement opportunities and how you tender. So that has gone a significant way in some of the hubs that we've opened in the Eastern Cape is a focus area for us. On the depreciation policy, the depreciation policy is in line with international financial reporting standards. And basically, we depreciate on a straight line basis over the estimated useful life of the assets. So we have a variety of different assets in Transnet. For example, buildings could last from a life between 10 and 50 years. So you would depreciate a straight line over the 10 or the 50 years. So if a building costs R1 million and you depreciate it over 10 years, the depreciation would be $100,000 per year. Some of the assets are very long in terms of life, like the pipeline. A new pipeline can last 75 years. Rail infrastructure can last up to 95 years. And small equipment like vehicles would last maybe 3 years to 5 years, and you depreciate it straight line over that period. In terms of the revaluations, you are correct. There are assets that depreciate within our business. They especially come from rail as it relates to the infrastructure, from the port equipment and the port infrastructure, as well as again the pipeline network. And you'll see in the results in the slide that deals with the property, plants and equipment. And I'll just take you to it now. It is slide number 10. You'll see there's R55.2 billion of revaluations or increases in value of assets actually resulted. And that was mainly as a result of the rail infrastructure. I think in terms of the revaluations for your benefit, we have an independent external revaluation process every 2 years. And in terms of international financial reporting standards, we do an index valuation internally every year.
Okay, Nonku, the human resources retention policy, I think the honorable member wanted to know whether the people are paid enough. And I know you do a lot of surveying. I think you must answer the question. May you want to defer to the government?
I'd like to answer the question. In terms of the retention strategy, we do have a retention strategy, and we look at different things, like we incentivize. We have an incentive scheme that is tied to the individual performance as well as the company's performance to ensure that they perform and continue to perform and based on their performance and the transition performance and get rewarded on that. But also there is the development that is targeted to on levels within our institution. It's also tied up to gender as well to strengthen the development in those areas. But there is also a education that is sent to the strategy. I'll just leave it at that for now.
Thank you very much. Job creation follows economic growth. So to the extent that we would say in terms of our budget, in terms of economic activity, that we're going to improve or increase tonnage by a particular amount, then we would create jobs in line with the rhythm of that economic activity. So where in our targets fall short, it is because the actual activity did not reach those levels. So as you have more activity taking place, then you'll find that there is created more jobs as a result of that. I think that question is linked to another one. Around female employment that was also asked. I think it's important and fair to indicate that, in fact, the rate of absorption of new employees at the moment is about 70% new hires is female and 30% male. So we're trying to accelerate the absorption of female employees into the company. So if you see more activity and more people taken in, you must understand that 70% of who we are taken in at the moment is largely female employees and less male employees. The issue of the regular expenditure, yes, it has dropped from 49 million to 32 million. But maybe Gary, it's important that we highlight the destination of the regular expenditure, because sometimes people think that it's money that was that was spent irresponsibly, when sometimes it's just that the processes were followed after. Can you explain?
Thank you, Mr. Gama, and to you, Chair, again. The irregular expenditure correctly reduced from 49 to 32 million. The concept, we have a zero tolerance view as it relates to any aspects of losses from criminal conduct, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, or irregular expenditure. So 1 cent is too much. We have the processes and procedures in place, but I want to highlight fruitless and wasteful expenditure is expenditure made in vain that could have been avoided had reasonable care been exercised. So you're wasting money. Irregular expenditure doesn't necessarily say you didn't get value from the money, but you might not have followed an internal process or procedure. And I can tell you that if we had to look at the breakdown of the 32 million, it mainly relates to contracts that were expired that weren't then either renewed in time or the procurement process wasn't finished in time. So if a contract had 5 years, it maybe exceeded or went to 5 years and 6 months whilst we were concluding the procurement process. And we've put a lot of effort into it, and I'll explain some of the initiatives in a few moments. Additionally, other reasons are the contract costs that, for example, if we had a contract value for 10 million and we spent 11 million, so we exceeded the contract value. Those are the two main reasons for the irregular expenditure, and they make up 80% of the 32 million. Slide 26 in the presentation shows Transnet's response to any PFMA related aspects, whether it be losses from criminal conduct, forensic or fraud, as well as fruitless and wasteful and irregular. And you'll see that we've conducted significant training, and Mr. Gama highlighted that 12 of our initiatives have been completed of the 19. There's a huge amount of data analytics that we started putting into the business, especially around forensic indicators, fraud resistance assessments, compliance checks, development and implementation of supplier integrity pacts, which is very important, where the supplier commits to ensure that they run their business with integrity. We've also conducted compliance reviews by our internal, independent internal auditors, looking at the implementation of the delegation of authority on our SAP system, which will avoid overspending on contracts because the system won't allow you to pay anyone if you've exceeded the contract value. So you'll see by slide 26 significant amounts of progress has been made. And I can tell the committee that as of today, if you compare the 32 million to today, end of January, it's 5 million for this financial year. So you're starting to see the fruits of a lot of these initiatives coming into play. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
green color on shake, it means you are rolling out this program, and they are yielding results.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The violent strike at Nukra measures to curb it. Let's just preface the response by indicating that the violent strike that took place in Port Elizabeth was as a result of a union that is not recognized by some. They don't have the number for them to reach a threshold, and they probably have out of 55,000 employees, maybe 150 members that they were recruiting. And therefore were not recognized, but were trying in fact to use violence in order for them to be recognized. It's a difficult one because there's an ongoing tackle in the industrial relations arena at the moment amongst different unions. You would be aware of the ongoing risk within and the new federations that are being formed. It's really very fertile ground for this type of what we would want to do is to work very closely with the security class in terms of being able to deal with these issues. So you can expect, I think, that there will be a growing thing, because in the past you would be aware that the union organized in particular sectors. But NUM has taken a view that they are going to organize across sector, so they're no longer looking at just mining, they look at anything or everything. And it's causing a lot of issues in terms of that. But I think that we were able to deal with that particular issue. We can't say it's not going to happen again, but I think the dynamic industrial relations climate, but we continue to look at it. You seem to be indicating that our communication strategy falls short in terms of notifying communities. I think the board has also indicated to us that there's a lot of good work that we do that doesn't seem to be reaching everyone, and that we need to up our game in terms of doing that. But maybe it's the manner and way in which we've been doing things. We've been trying very hard not to spend too much money on communication, but Mr. Mbonis is here, and he will tell us what we are going to do differently in the future.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the question. Yes, as the acting GCE has indicated, traditionally Transnet has tried not to spend a lot of money on broad communication initiatives. However, what we've been doing, we've been targeting our communication towards the relevant stakeholders and based it on issues. For instance, the CFO was talking about the initiatives in the rural areas that we've undertaken in terms of supply development. We've actually done a lot of communication work to make sure that those initiatives are appreciated and are popular within those particular communities. And perhaps maybe there may be a need, and one of the reasons for that, the major reason really, is cost. And perhaps there is a need, since it has been raised several times now, that we start looking at it differently and do the national campaign.
Thank you very much. The transport economist, Andrew Massey, that you talk about, we always see these comments on anything relating to Transnet
which we believe are unwarranted, which are untrue. We suggest that he should rather engage with us so that he can have a better understanding of what his issues are. Because it happens all the time, if Andrew Masai says something about transmission, it's not informed. So, Tanuja Naidu will indicate that there is no mode of transport that is going to be cheaper than the country. It's just not possible that you'll find any other mode of transport that is cheaper than the pipeline. The pipeline is the cheapest mode of transport when you want to transport liquid bus. You can go anywhere in the world. It's just like that. It's not going to change. It's not going to change because now Transnet is building a new pipeline, or that there may be perceptions that over budget, it doesn't mean that it's going to change. But Tanuja and I will just give you a breakdown of the actual prices and all of that, and can give you a comparative analysis of pricing, whether it's rail or truck, but all of those, the pricing will be far in excess of what the supply.
Thank you, Mr.
Gardner.
To you, Madam Chair. One thing he's certainly correct about is pipeline is the most environmentally friendly mode of transport. It is the safest. But more importantly than that, putting more volumes in the pipeline actually lowers the cost of doing business in the country. So more volume doesn't mean increased revenue for transport, but what it does mean for the country is that it's a lower cost of doing business in the country. So most certainly we do want more volumes in the pipeline. But the biggest challenge at the moment is the informed market information out there. We know that there's trucks in the road.
Mm.
We certainly know that some of them have to be there because they have to transport the fuel to the forecourt. The pipe won't go there. We also know that there are trucks in the road because clients have infrastructure challenges for offloading from pipe or unloading to rail on the road. Okay. But what we don't have a view of is what's the surplus. What's there on the road that needs to get into the pipe? And we have monthly meetings with clients, and they tell us that everything that's supposed to go in pipe is there. Certainly, there is no client that's turned away from Transnet Pipeline. Mr. Gama previously indicated that between the DJP and the NNPP, we counted 115 million litres a week. Currently, the capacity is 152 million litres a week. We have not turned clients away. So the question is, what is our fix? And if anybody can give us that informed stat, that will really help us. And just to quote the actual cents per litre, had was gross in 2016, 29 cents per litre, Durban to Johannesburg pipe, a very high level estimate of road at the time, just informed by maintenance, informed by tolls, no kind of reinvestment into their fleet, 58.8 cents per litre. 16-17, what we're filing for, 75 cents per litre pass, road, our high-level estimate, without even any reinvestment into the fleet again, 62.5 cents per litre.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I think that clears that particular matter in terms of... But I think you're quite right, Mboneso, the members of the public, they want to hear the truth from Transnet and not from analysts. So maybe we need to just deal with that. In terms of the fatalities and deaths, the people that that died, they did not die at work. It was because of road accidents. But during working hours and sometimes using our vehicles. So all of the deaths, they happened on public roads and highways. We do help the deceased families. We have employee assistance programs to the families as well as the co-workers. And sometimes we find that the person was a breadwinner.
So when we visit the families, certain discussions take place in terms of how best to soften the blow. It varies from family to family. So we don't have, we can't say that, you know, there's a consistent sort of standard way in which we deal with it. But it really depends on the discussion that we have with the families. The issue of the Auditor General in terms of irregular expenditure in 2012-13 and 13-14 has in fact, I think to a large extent, been mitigated, and we do have the Auditor General sitting in our Audit Committee meetings, and I think he's quite satisfied with the progress that we have made so far. On research and development, we did not meet the budget because I think as the research and development started, and it took a little bit of time to get to the levels where we wanted to get to, but we would want at some point to invite the honorable member to come into our facilities at the CSIR in Pretoria. There's mind-boggling things that are happening there. I think you will be very proud of the outputs and the outcomes in terms of some of the work that very, very young people, very bright young people, South Africans, from all kinds of backgrounds that they're doing at the Transnet R&D facility. We're certainly very proud of it as Transnetters. The industrialization program, Mr. Peter, do you want to talk about the program?
Thank you, Mr. Gama. Thank you, Chair. Transnet is one of the first SSEs that it started driving a competitive supply development program in 2008. You will recall that we had the National Industrial Participation Program, the MIP program from DTI. And both Eskom and Transnet then asked that we actually increase the or accelerate the impact of a MIP program and create a competitive supply development program. The problem was, under the DTI program, you wouldn't necessarily have to invest in the industry in which you were operating. So with the Competitive Supply Development Program, Transnet has entered into contracts, billions of rands of contracts, where supply development commitments come in. When we actually award a tender, we actually ask for localization commitments in line with the National Treasury Instruction Notes around locomotives, around wagons, component parts. We also ask tenderers for improvements in their BEE status, not just on a level basis, but in terms of employment equity, in terms of ownership, in terms of meaningful participation. And we go and we audit them, we check them, so as to ensure that there's no fronting. This is all part of our tender procedures. So you don't win work with us unless you comply with these aspects. And they are as important an obligation to us as building the locomotive itself. So localization, you'll see from a transit point of view, we're meeting the 75% procurement accord that was signed with government and business. In fact, we're exceeding it. On industrialization, you can only industrialize sectors where you have a large amount of spend to be able to influence the industry. So Transnet is looking at industrializing the rolling stock sector. And that's why we entered into a significant locomotive procurement event in recent years, and Mr. Gama highlighted all the locomotives that are coming in. And the locomotives have, on average, around 70% supply development of the total contract value that will come to South Africa. We've also determined with the DTI that there's a multiplier effect on every rand that we spend. And due to that localization, for example, the 106-4 locomotive contract, a 50 billion rand contract, if you take 70% localized the supply development, it's 35 billion. And the DTI calculated on a factor of 2.74 that we would have close to 100 billion rand impact just from that contract to the economy. And that is as a result of a lot of downstream suppliers actually supplying. Before, in the old days, locomotives would be built overseas. We maybe have 10% localization. 70% localization with only about 15% going to Transnet Engineering for assembly
means there's a significant 55% out there for other South African companies, and that's industrialization. And once they get better with it over the next 5 years in building our locomotives, they'll become competitively they'll become competitive against the rest of the world, and they'll be able to export to other countries, especially in Africa.
The integrity of the pipeline and the safety of the communities. Yes, we did have an unfortunate incident in December around the pipeline. But we don't believe that it's a huge problem. It's one of those incidents where it's a probability of 1 to 50 million that something of that nature would happen. But we are, as a matter of cause and as a matter of concern, we have asked an independent entity from the UK to just go through the pipeline again, just to assist us in terms of having a better understanding. But we don't believe that the safety of the public is at risk, but that the board and the executive is unanimous in the fact that we must make every effort to make sure that there's no exposure at all.
Thank you,
Madam
Chair. Yes, concerning the pipeline, we have taken various initiatives since the last December, the Alberson leak that you referred to. We've got operating pressures, right? And as Mr. Gama has indicated, we've devised a revised plan, which we've got confirmed by a UK company, Arthur D. Little. So we are running the pipeline at low operating pressure. We are using the revised maintenance program on the pipeline. It involves coping surveys, closer intervals of pegging. But I think what's very important to note is that there's an inherent defect on the line. Whatever we're doing is not going to take away the fact that if you use pre-1970 steel, and then the pipeline is the steel that breaks, right? So we are doing everything possible now to make sure that we meet our 1st November date to operationalize the NAPP, and 6 months from that date, the DJP will be performed.
Thank you very much. So even that DJP, the decommissioning, is also now at the planning stage. The Durban Dugout Court is deferred till 2024. Yeah, not 2040. I think that's passes to there. On the matter of the billboard, 2024. It's an 8 years time. Yeah, it's another 8 years from now.
We'll still be alive.
God willing. Any particular reason for that deferment?
The global economic downturn, I think, has indicated to us that we needed to defer it. But importantly, in an effort to make sure that we sweat our assets and we maximize the usage of the existing platform, we had discussions with the Department of Defense, and they gave us two berths at the Sunset Island, which were in the process of finalizing. So we felt that in terms of sequencing, we must in fact build those two berths first at Sunset, which would give us 1.4 million TEUs. So, and then after that, we will then go on to the Devon Airport. So it's just a sequencing issue as a result of the naval base becoming available to Transnet. On the billboard issue, it's probably an issue to do with our property business. We are not aware of the issue, so we'll just take it offline and chat to you about it and see if we can get more information so that we can resolve it. The the student bursary is, now do you want to talk about our bursary schemes?
Thank you, Mr. Gama. Yes, we have a bursary scheme for students that have qualified to move from the matric into further studies. Our bursary scheme is mostly aligned to the careers that will eventually employ into our business. We do have therefore maritime studies will fall amongst those.
Also, just talk about the two schools. I think maybe you want to talk a little bit about the Simonstown and the school in Richards Bay in terms of what we do at high school.
So,
thank you very much, I think I would like to touch on the comment around the maritime specifically before I move into the school. The maritime studies that we have and the program and the assistance that we provide. I can indeed confirm that we do have the Maritime School of Science and based in Durban, the head office. And we do have satellite offices as well in various spots across the country. And we do have various programs that we offer. And what we critically look at for the admission, and we do assist the students when they are admitted, is a good pass rate in terms of mathematics and science. And we advertise broadly in the papers to make sure that people are aware of the intake that we are going to have for the particular year. And I would also like to indicate through the active indulgence and participation from Google Chat and our GCE, we manage also to extend the offering in terms of our courses to our African courses as well. We are assisting Namibia, for example, Ghana. We send students to come and participate in our program, and I can also confirm that they are SAMHSA accredited and also TICA accredited. So in terms of the schools that we target within the COVID line, for example, the Queen's Town schools that the acting chief is talking about, we do look at students within that particular school, identify and carry a particular school to say we will assist the students in terms of extra lessons that they would like to attend, and also motivate them to follow the maritime career after they have done their courses very well. So we measure them from a maths and science perspective, not starting at a matric level, but we also go below so that we groom them, starting from, for example, grade 8. By the time they meet grade 12, they're already very strong in terms of mathematics and science. So we carry those students and make sure that we go through them, and it makes it easier for the acceptance as well at the maritime school or even at the Durban University of Technology, because that's where we are also focusing in terms of the maritime studies and also sending our students. I will give the other maybe comments to the GEHR.
Thank you very much. In terms of regional connectivity, in terms of our Africa business and the fact that we didn't meet the target in terms of transfer engineering, yes, it is true. It's some ongoing work that we continue to do. Sometimes what tends to happen is that the length of time that it takes to process certain of the transactions, you find that you start something this year, but you only really get to process it the following year because of the tender processes that we have to follow in different countries. But I'm glad to say that we continue to make inroads into African countries. For instance, we are producing for a neighboring country some new coaches for their railway line at the moment, and there's quite a few orders that we're looking at. But because you go out on tender, you can have a huge pipeline of things that you think you might do, but you win some, you lose some. It's part of the game. In terms of regional connectivity, our minister is pleased with dealing with that particular aspect in terms of the North-South corridor. and Transnet is the implementing authority. We do have a number of measures in terms of what we call the international strategy of Transnet to look at the hinterland map of here to try and join the East Coast coastline on the Indian Ocean, more specifically with the hinterland in the landlocked countries such as Botswana, Zambia, and all of those countries. We continue to work on Southern African Development Community Integrated Planning and Development Framework that will assist us in terms of understanding the needs of landlocked countries vis-a-vis from the coastal areas. That is work in progress. It's going to take probably the next 6 to 7 years for it to reach finality. I think from the executive side, we have answered most, if not all, of the questions. We hand over to the board to answer the later questions.
Thank you, Chief. Before I respond to the matter that is a concern of concern the acting GCE, I want to apologize first. In my opening remarks, I erred by not acknowledging and recognizing the members of DPE in our midst. Apologies. The matter of the GCE, of the acting GCE, speaking on behalf of the Transit Board, we had two vital positions at Transit that were open, the GCFO and the GCE. To bring to the committee's assurance and rest, the GCFO has been filled, as we have Gary Peter in previously. The matter of GCE, there is a process. This matter is at heart to us as a Transit Board. It is receiving our fullest attention. We are busy with the process, we are aware of it, and the other thing that I want to bring to the committee is we have someone who is acting, who is familiar with the Transnet business, Mr. Gama, but to bring it to your assurance and your rest and affirmation, I just want to tell you that the matter is receiving its full attention. You will hear soon. Thank you. Honourable members, we are almost 10 minutes before we adjourn. You still have follow-up questions. Let me take Honourable Teddy. Honourable Liyenge, are you having a follow-up question? Okay.
Just one last question.
And then it's followed by Honourable Sam. Yes.
One last piece. I think it came out from slide 26 on sharing knowledge with other institutions. And I want to take a different approach by taking from the shareholder chair, especially in the light of what we recommended last week, that we might have to use forums of this nature to try and get general impressions from the shareholders' perspective in terms of how entities that report to the department are performing, especially in the area of the implementation of the shareholder compact and a whole range of other issues relevant to the work that we're doing. You will remember that we have recommended a forum where entities can meet from time to time and share best practices. Arrive from the perspective of the shareholder who might need to be updated on progress in relation to that particular aspect. As I've indicated, I picked it up from slide 26 to direct it to the company. I would rather appreciate a situation where the shareholder just try and talk to that particular aspect. I'm aware of the fact that the information might not have reached representatives of the shareholders in the light of what we have just agreed upon last week, that going forward we'll appreciate a situation where the shareholder assist us in terms of giving us progress in relation to the implementation of the shareholder compact as and when we meet in forums of this nature. But in this aspect, I'm specifically interested in that particular aspect, knowledge sharing with other entities as raised by the presenter.
Thanks, Chairperson. I apologize. I just want to raise a concern in connection with the communication strategy of ESCOM, of Transnet. I'm worried about your concern or your worry about the communication here, you know, that you are looking at your budget or expenses that you are doing. But for us and for the communities out there to know, you'll have to have a communication strategy. I know you would say you've got students that you are taking or you are, but there are areas like the area I'm coming from Alwal North. It's a Joker. It's a rural district, which I think ESCOM should do more effort to go, no Transnet, to go, okay, sorry, my apologies. So Transnet should do more for us, especially in the issues of bursary. We've got students, a day before yesterday, I was in Beraskop. Beraskop has got a railway line that passes there. But the community in Beraskop does not know what is happening within the Transnet entity and which batteries are there. If it is possible for Transnet, give us a pamphlet as this committee to have it, so that when we meet in our constituencies with the communities, we are able to then do the communication, help you to do the communication with the people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is a follow-up on the acting for the acting. I'm very much concerned with the... In fact, I appreciate the work that has been done. But if you can couple that now with the time frame, how do you conclude this whole process? So that you finish this thing up and then we know that everything is going well. Because the prophecies of doom are always looking at us and say maybe you are waiting for a mistake to come up and then you discuss someone else.
Let me clarify the question.
Chair, just my last question. CFO, you know where this is going. We haven't touched on the Transnet pensioners issue, nods knowingly. Can we just have an update of where that is, what's happening, what the last round of payouts were? I know the court case has been, from what I saw last, postponed. You can imagine literally hundreds and hundreds of emails coming all the time about the pensioners. So please, if we can just have an update as to where we are, and especially where we are with... communicating with the pensioners from Transnet side.
Okay. Thank you. In terms of the MDS, you projected 588,000 jobs to be created over the 7-year period. We into year three. Just wanted to know how many you've projected created so far, and then you mentioned an IDZ in Danzane, and I'm glad Mpuma Koloni got mentioned here, my province. But I'm wondering if you're aware of the 120 factories that had to close down in Zimbabwe when the government support subsidies were withdrawn so radically. And most of the textile factories had to close thousands and thousands of people lost their jobs. The automobile manufacturers moved to East London. Thousands and thousands of people lost their jobs. An entire economy collapsed. Now, seeing as you have mentioned the Eastern Cape, and seeing as you have said that that is one of your areas, is there any way that you can perhaps look at perhaps starting one of your R&D, the centers, the training centers and things like that in that area? Because there are 288,000 unemployed people in the Buffalo City Metro currently, all looking, young people, the majority of them looking to improve their skills that they can then go and find work elsewhere. And to couple with the question about the rail infrastructure from Richards Bay, for example, through Mthatha, for example, if economic growth is stimulated, your mandate, and job creation, your mandate, happens within that area, then it will be adequate justification for a rail network in that area one day. So if you've got any ideas or at least a commitment to look into it, thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to reiterate again that the matter is receiving our utmost attention as Transnet Corp. With time limits, I would say within reasonable time, we are engaging with the shareholder minister with on the matter, because it's also a burden to her. So just to give the committee assurance, the matter is receiving our fullest attention, and within a reasonable time, you will hear, I assure you. Thank you.
Reasonable time, assurance, you will hear. Acting.
On the Mthanzane side, probably it's not an idea that that we but it's the Enterprise Development Hub. I think we are also quite familiar with the Timbaza issue, which is very unfortunate, because it's really similar types of things that happened also in other parts of the country when some of these subsidies were withdrawn. We do want to make a huge impact as a result of that, and specifically, I think what we try and do with this center is to promote entrepreneurship, because there's a whole range of people out there who think that they're going to find jobs that actually manage with them, and that entrepreneurship in fact is the way to go to get people to be confident enough for them to go through ideation processes around new concepts and business startups, and be able to create jobs themselves rather than hoping that they will be job created. So, yes, that one-stop process, we're going to accelerate that in the Mthanzane and the Mthatha in the new financial year. And would like to touch as many lives as possible as a result of that particular process. Gary, you want to add?
Thank you, Mr. Gomez. What I can confidently say is that we are quite far ahead in terms of the opening of the Enterprise Development Hub, and we aim to open the hub in June of this year, of this calendar year. So it's the start of our new financial year. In fact, that's the next hub that we plan to open. And what we will be doing is we'll be ensuring that we integrate the activities of all the different divisions within the area so that procurement opportunities are channeled within the hub, so that we can also help foster and create and incubate new business, small business, startups. As the committee knows, a large percentage of startups fail within the first 2 years. And And we believe it's not just about creating jobs, it's about creating sustainable business, which will create sustainable jobs. And that's why we're pushing a lot of effort into this. Incidentally, the hubs that we've already opened in for example, the Northern Cape is in, for example, Saldanha and the Western Cape, had significant achievements. A lot of walk-ins from the public, a lot of registered clients assisting them with opening companies, assisting them with their tax affairs, getting valid tax certificates, and with understanding how to actually deal with big business, because that's part of the problem is understanding how do you actually tender for work. And we're seeing a lot of results coming through there, and we hope and are confident that we will push the same sort of achievements in the Eastern Cape through in Tanzania as far as development hub.
The issue of the partnership will ask Mr. Stanley Shane to deal with that particular question. The question of
Chair Lady, honourable members, just by way of a little bit of background, the official response in terms of, I assume a question was asked in relation to the litigation which is currently underway, and as the chairman of the Transnet Pension Fund, now known as the Transport Pension Fund, and the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund, a combined value of about 28 billion rand between them, our legal counsel advises the following response, and I'm going to elaborate on it afterwards, but the matter is sub judice, and as such we're not at liberty to comment on the proceedings of the litigation other than to confirm that after all the interlocutory issues have been dealt with, the matter will come before the courts either in April or May. So it is making progress. I should draw the committee's attention to the fact that these matters relate to allegations which date back as far as 1990, 25 years ago. It's hard to find some of the people, as the honourable member mentioned, they're not all around, literally and figuratively at this stage. But the senior, our counsel and the attorneys are dealing with it. The two pension funds that I mentioned are named as respondents, as well as Transnet SRC Limited in its current format, and that's got its own complexities because obviously the matter relates to the predecessors to Transnet as it now is structured, and I don't want to bore the committee with the details other than to say that it does take the board's, it has the board's full attention. I think that concomitant to the resolution of these issues is the acknowledgement by Transnet, by the trustees and the boards of the pension funds themselves, and to bring the human element to the committee's attention, and that's as follows. These are people at the end of the day. I think that a lot of this litigation has been driven by vested interests and other forces. But behind all of that, I was appointed in December of 2014. It's been a great honor and a pleasure to serve my country and to see firsthand an organization that's world-class and well-run. And I was pleasantly surprised at that, and I pay give credit to my colleagues for that. I've got no motivation but to report that as having been proud and honoured to be able to serve. Behind those pension funds are people, and in January 2015, which is a year ago, we had our first board meeting or second board meeting, when it was reported that two of those pensioners that are being utilised in this court case, because it's a class action court case, it's one of the first that has been certified in South Africa. Two of those pensioners drove to their local grocery stores over Christmas of 2014. Their pensions were insufficient to pay for their groceries. They left their trolleys at the checkout. They drove home, and that night they came and gassed themselves to death in their motor car outside the shop. And I think that will highlight to everybody the seriousness with which we deal with these issues, and the seriousness with which the fact that these pension funds were structured from another era. They were structured in the 1970s as what we call the defined benefit funds, and such Transnet is obligated to pay the benefits to the pensioners in terms of the act. I won't bore everybody with the details. We are in the process, in addition to dealing with the litigation, of restructuring those pension funds to be able to optimize the pension fund payouts to the beneficiaries, to the people that were the beneficiaries, that were employees at the time and are therefore the beneficiaries of the funds today, as defined benefit funds. Any surpluses left in those pension funds would revert to the company. The company has no interest in maintaining that structure. We don't want the pensioners' money back. We want to restructure the pension funds in a way that the pensioners are looked after and optimized as time goes on, specifically those two pension funds. So those are my comments. We are dealing with the legal issues. As I say, I think that it has been a proxy for a whole lot of other issues, which I don't want to get into. The matters are being dealt with by our legal counsel as best as can be achieved, and we are desirous of reaching settlement in conjunction with Transnet and Transnet's legal advisors. We all retain separate counsel and separate legal advisors in the matter, and therefore I answer this question in my capacity as chairman of the funds, where I maintain my fiduciary duty as a trustee of or a board member of the funds themselves, but obviously having been deployed there under strict instruction from Transnet to achieve optimal result for all the parties concerned.
Chair, can I? You want to say something?
Well, there's a question that has been directed to the
chair. Okay.
In terms of lessons sharing between the SOCs, the minister actually has a chairperson forum, which constitutes of the chairperson of all of the SOCs that report to the DPE and their CEOs, and it meets on a regular basis, on a quarterly basis. The chairperson forum meets to share experiences and best practices and advise on how to enhance the offering of the SOC. And there are several committees within that forum. There's a governance forum that meets on a regular basis for the SOCs to share experiences in the governance space. There's an SOE procurement forum that also meets on a regular basis to assist the SOCs with regard to best practice in that space. And in cases where we see that there's a need for a particular issue for one company to help the other company with, we do that. As an example, we've identified at this point that we may need to use some of the financial experiences and knowledge around turnaround from Transnet, since it has been so successful in its turnaround strategy, to help companies like SA Express, for instance, with their own turnaround strategy.
Thank you very much, honorable members. If there are no more questions, I think we need to give the chairperson the final word before we close the meeting. If you are not obliged, if you don't have anything, you can just.
I just want to thank the whole committee for the opportunity to present this meeting. I also want to thank the Transnet executive members. I want to thank you, chairperson. It's my second year as a chairperson of Transnet, and last year everything was, I was getting into it, but now I'm getting there. So I just want to thank everyone who's present here for the input and the questions. I said thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, before we close, let me make this the following remarks. Excuse me for a second. We had a very good presentation this morning, and we really appreciate the efforts in preparing what we have been
presenting to us, we can see a high level of professionalism in your operations. But critical to us, as we'll be listening to the Minister of Finance this afternoon, fiscal discipline should be the order of the day. The President said very seriously that we need to tighten up belts. He mentioned about parliament, provinces and governments, which I suppose will also include the state-owned enterprises in relation to tightening up the belt. Freezing of salaries, if it needs be. We are not saying people should staff a CEO and a finance person, but we need to be cautious because we are really in a very bad time now. The issues of drought are a reality, the economic slowdown, the economy which is not growing, the downgrading, all these negative elements are with us. So all of us, we need to exercise high level of patriotism. It is not about us this time, it is about our country first and the people we serve. As we go back to our work, we need to put this in our minds that these are really difficult times for all of us. Thank you very much.
Members, the chairperson requests us to take a 5-minute break.
Okay.
That's so that we can adopt the minutes.
Cool.
And allow transparency to pass.